Come plan your dream wedding all in one day at the 17th Annual Newport Bridal Show on March 3rd. Meet with more than 80 top wedding professionals at two of Newport's most romantic venues, Rose Cliff and Ocean Cliff Mansions. Visit NewportBridalShow.net to buy your ticket today.
From the Providence Journal's commentary team, this is The Insiders with Ed Acorn. Digging beneath the headlines to find out more.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Insiders with Ed Acorn. I'm your host, Ed Acorn, the Vice President and Editorial Pages Editor of the Providence Journal. We have a special podcast today with two guests who have great interest in the Achievement First Mayoral Academy in Providence. In a state where public schools are generally performing very poorly compared with Massachusetts next door, that school has had spectacular success while serving, among others, some of the poorest children in the state. Angel Tavares was the mayor of Providence when he decided to support the creation of a mayoral academy in the city. Elizabeth Winningen is the Director of External Relations for Achievement First. She has been working for Achievement First in Providence for 5 years. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ed.
Mayor, could you tell us why you decided to bring this form of public education to Providence?
Well, thank you, Ed, and thank you for shining a light on it. Let me first say that I want to give credit as well to Mayor Abadesian, Mayor Fung, Mayor Lombardi, because all of them were part of the application.
That's
so,
right.
I want to make sure to point that out, and those cities continue to be part of Achievement First. But really, for me, it was a focus on what can we do to increase achievement, to really help kids learn. And one of the challenges is that when you're working within the system, certainly as mayor, you're working through the collective bargaining process, which is an important process. Certainly, I understand that. But the changes are hard. For example, I was only able to get 15 extra minutes of school in my first contract with the teachers union. And I give Steve Smith and the union a lot of credit for that. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to extend that or get a second contract with them. But it was only 15 minutes, and it was 5 minutes each year. Now it's 15 minutes longer than when I started in 2011.
So it took 3 years to get 15 minutes
extra. That's right, 3 years. And what Achievement First brought was a track record of success and the ability to do some things that I thought could be an example for other schools in Providence and around our state. And that is a longer school day, a longer school year. You have principals who pick their staff. And all of these things put together and the strong curriculum, I thought was really important for us to see, okay, let's take the same kids. Mm-hmm. And let's see what happens when you extend that school day. What happens when you extend the school year? What happens when you have a real focused curriculum and you give the principal power? And let's see what happens. And quite frankly, it has exceeded my expectations. I thought it would be the results would be very positive, but they've just been outstanding. And so I'm very proud of that. But as you and I have talked to before, by the time the kids are in third grade at Achievement First, they've had an extra year of schooling because of the longer school day and the longer school year. So yeah. By the time they're in third grade, and Elizabeth can correct me, I mean, they've had an extra year, the equivalent of an extra year of schooling. So that makes a big difference, Ed. And we know that kids can learn, and I think Achievement First is proof of it.
Tell us a bit about the success of Achievement First, especially in the recent Rhode Island Comprehensive Assessment System, or RICAS tests.
Again, Ed, I want to thank you for asking us to be on the show today. We are really proud of our scholars and our teachers and leaders, particularly because of the RICAS results recently. If you average the scores across all of our schools, we have two elementaries and one middle school, we're K to 6 right now, about 56% of our scholars were proficient on the RICAS exam. In the state, the proficiency level is 34%, again, if you average it. And in Providence, it's closer to about 16%.
Wow.
It's a really big difference. I'd like to take a minute just to highlight one of our school's third graders. This was the first year they took the test. And those third graders, 80% were proficient in math and 76% in English language arts. So they're the highest performing school in Rhode Island based on those results, and about 35% of those kids entered kindergarten as English language learners.
Wow. So they come from homes where English is not the primary language.
Correct. And of that school, you know, about 88% of our kids live in Providence.
Yeah.
As Angel mentioned, about 7% come from Cranston, 5% from North Providence, and only about 2% from Warwick because of the distance, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Wow. What's the secret?
That's the question I get all the time. I don't think there is one magic bullet, but I would like to emphasize a couple of the things Angel has already shared. More time in school is critically important. We are able to spend about 3 hours a day on literacy, 2 hours on math. That might be the total amount of time that a traditional public school has for academics.
Yeah.
We also have time for enrichment and gym and lunch and everything. But and so I think when you put all of that time together, you get really strong outcomes.
So what's your school day? When does it start? When does it end? And how does that compare with the traditional schools?
Our day starts for our kids at 7:30 sharp and ends at about 4:15 Monday through Thursday. We dismiss early on Fridays, so 7:30 until 12:45 on Fridays. Mm-hmm. I believe the traditional school day in each of our districts varies a little bit, but it's about 9 to 3 or 8 to 2. It's closer to a 6-hour day.
Yeah. Wow. And that really adds up over time.
It does. It does. And I think the other pieces that we have in place are our principals having the power to hire their own staff and a strong aligned curriculum that we use across all of our schools. We have schools in Connecticut and New York as well. We actually provide daily lesson plans to our teachers so that they can spend time prepping intellectually rather than writing a lesson plan. They actually get to practice their lesson before they're in front of kids.
Right. Now, at traditional schools, principals don't have the right to fire someone they don't think is doing a great job?
I don't believe so, no.
Yeah. So that's the principal has a great deal of authority at Achievement First.
Yeah, I mean, naturally, we would have a similar process to any organization. We would never just fire a teacher.
Right.
But the principal has the power and the authority to support teachers to get where they need to be. And if a teacher is not sort of making adequate progress and serving their students with exceptionally, at the end of the year, it is common in our organization for maybe 3 or 4% of our teachers not to be asked to return.
Wow. And how does that compare to traditional schools?
That's a good question. I'm not sure what the percentage is.
Would you think it's Mayor, would you think it's much less?
I'm not certain on that. I think the big issue is that you're able to have a leader in the school that makes a decision based on what they believe is best for the student, not based on the length of time that someone has been teaching.
Right.
And so I think that's a very important.
So it's not just seniority.
It is not just seniority. Yeah. And so that's very important. And I think that they are having that ability to select that staff and to do that. And in Providence, I tell you, we had I don't know of any good school that doesn't have a good principal. I just don't. And so in Providence, and we had some excellent principals, and some of whom even changed schools. And you could see wherever they went, they were able to improve that school culture, improve performance, improve the outcomes of the kids. So that's a really important thing. But for us, I mean, what I'd like to see is people look more at Achievement First to see what can we learn from it, what can we do in other places to have similar success. Because too often, and I know you've heard it and I've heard it, you know, the talking point from a lot of my friends in the labor movement is that the most important thing in terms of student performance is the socioeconomic status of the mother.
Right.
And what I want to show is that, you know, all of those things are important in one way or another, but they're not an excuse, and that we can do things to really help kids have great outcomes. And we're seeing it at Achievement First because the kids, and she mentioned it as well with the, Elizabeth mentioned it with the ELL learners, about 34%, I think you said, entered kindergarten as an ELL. So that tells you that we need to spend more time with them. We need to have them in school longer.
Yeah.
And that's not just us here. I mean, around the world, some of the countries have much longer school days than we do. So my hope is that instead of trying to find reasons or to point out why Achievement First is doing well, and that people really say, let's take those things and let's put it into our public schools, because we need to make sure that our kids get educated.
Well, Is this transferable, or are there political or other forces that would prevent traditional schools from doing some of these things?
Well, I think it's transferable. I think that lengthening the school day and lengthening the school year is transferable without a doubt, and giving the giving the principal more power in that sense. I think the challenge to some degree is certainly money. I mean, and that's something that I understand and certainly heard from, and that is, you know, lengthen the school day. We want to have more compensation in terms of that. But I definitely think it's transferable, but you have to have the will to do it and make sure that that you can reach an agreement to get it done, because every year that goes by that we're not educating our kids is the year that they're falling further behind. Yeah. And so we can do better. And I know that Achievement First is just one example of it.
Well, the issue is money, but does Achievement First have more money than traditional schools to operate per student?
No, we don't. We actually have a little bit less per student to operate. We do have the benefit of not incurring some of the costs that our traditional public school friends have. I would say the biggest of those costs being the our teachers do not contribute to the teacher pension.
Right.
They have a 403B retirement plan that we both, you know, that teachers can contribute to, as does Achievement First.
Yeah.
But that does allow us to take more of the per pupil dollars and put those that money directly into classrooms. And I do think that makes an impact.
That's an interesting point. So the per pupil numbers in traditional schools include the cost of pensions?
They do.
Wow.
They do. It's what it costs to what it costs overall in terms of the the labor. And quite frankly, for the most part, the biggest cost is employees, obviously, as it is in many businesses.
As anything,
yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
What are some of the other elements you think that make Achievement First do very well?
I think if you asked one of our principals this question, he would say that the single biggest factor in his school is truly having an aligned staff that is 100% mission aligned and truly focused on the students in front of them every single day for every minute that they're in the building. I think having a really strong team of adults who show a united front, we really operate as a team at Achievement First.
Yeah.
And I think that type of support in a school building is not only really good for adults and creates a strong culture, but our students see adults that are working together as a team, as a united front every day, and that creates students who act in that manner as well. So
do they see that in traditional schools or not?
That's a great question. I do think a big difference in our schools is we are able to put two teachers in every classroom in our kindergarten through fourth grade classes, and so they are team teaching. We have a team approach to almost everything we do at Achievement First, and I don't think it is common practice in the traditional schools to have two teachers in one room.
I see. Anything else in terms of the maybe how the students feel, or I mean, do they, after a few years, are they different than when they come in, do you think?
One of the things I hear from parents a lot is how much they appreciate the character education aspect of our schools. We don't only focus on academics at Achievement First. We believe achievement should come first, and that there are a lot of things that need to be in place in order for that to happen. And I would say one of the biggest things is having kids want to be in school. Kids need to be happy in school, emotionally safe, feeling like they're welcome in school. So if you come to our school at 7:30 in the morning, what you will see is children running into our school building, and every student is greeted with a handshake and looked at directly in the eyes and greeted by their name with a good morning every day. And it sounds like a very simple, small act, but I think it's really changes the culture of our school. Every student knows that the principal or one of our school leaders is really happy to see them, knows their name, and is happy to have them in the building that day.
Yeah.
And that really starts the day on a very good foot. So I think that's another difference that I see that I haven't experienced in a traditional school.
Yeah. How popular is this school? How many seats do you have, and how many applications are there for them?
That's a great question. I lead our recruitment work. This year, our application for our lottery opened in early November. It is still open now, so if you're interested in applying, please do. It's very easy. And right now, we have about 2,000 applications for about 180 seats.
Ooh. Wow. More than 10 to 1. What do you think of that, Mayor?
Well, I mean, obviously we need to continue to grow the school and to expand what we've learned from it and expand it into our other public schools as well. I think one thing that I wanted to point out, Ed, and we've talked about this in the past, you know, we did something a little bit different in Providence, and that is that if you go to register your child today, there's a school registration form you get if they're going to kindergarten up to fifth grade, and Achievement First is one of the choices.
Right.
In fact, I think it's the only mayoral academy or a charter school that is one of the choices. And the reason we did that was because we wanted to make sure that every single parent who registers their child has an opportunity to select Achievement First. So that this is not, you know, there's a lottery because by state law there has to be a lottery.
Right.
but there's not a special date for you know you to specifically go in and put your application. No, when you go to register your child on that registration form, it has Achievement First listed on it, just as it does all the other public schools. And I thought that was important because we want to make sure people know we're not cherry picking here. We're taking
right.
kids, same kids that are going to our province public schools. And we want to make sure, if it were up to me, I would love it to be totally random. Totally,
yeah.
You know, so that there'd be no issue as to that, because you'll hear that.
Not even checking off on a form.
I would love it to be totally random, because I do believe that it is the system, the way that you have it set up, the longer school day, longer school year, the teachers, all of that put together, that is improving the outcomes. And that's what we need to do moving forward. So we need to continue to grow. I know that Achievement First is growing. The governor worked hard to further expand that. There have been some issues there in terms of getting to the further expansion, but really the focus should be on the kids and what's best for the kids. And we know that it's working, and it's working well. And the other thing is, you know, we encourage people to visit, because it's important to see how engaged the students are, how much fun they're having, and what they're doing and learning. And so that's something that's very important. And the last thing I'll point out, because I think people may not know this, but the board meetings are public meetings. They're actually a public meeting, noticed, and anyone can go and sit in and listen. Because a lot of times people say, well, it's being run by a private group. It's this, that, the other. It actually, in many ways, is much more public than any of the traditional public schools. So you can go to the board meetings. Anyone can go sit in, listen, you know, and see exactly what's going on. So there's a lot of good going on there. But we need to do more, because there are too many of our kids who aren't doing well, and the education, without an education, particularly in this economy, your future is really in peril.
What I hear, you brought this up, but one of the complaints people make, well, this school picks off the cream of the crop, the best of the students, or students whose parents are motivated and involved, and that naturally they would do better. Is that the case?
Somebody asked this when I was hosting a tour in our school, and I had a parent with me, and she's a great parent, as I believe all parents are, and the response that the parent gave to this question I thought was really poignant. So she said, you know, I was able to get into the lottery in the school, and I'm really grateful for that, but my sister's children are at a school down the street, and what I'm hearing from you right now is that you think my sister must be a bad parent.
Hmm.
And I think when you look at it through that lens, I don't think any of us believe that the majority of our families are quote unquote not great families. I think all families want the best for their children, and all families send their children with the hope that that school is going to do right by their child, that that school is going to serve their child really well, and that their child's going to graduate with an education that will get them to a great career and or college. And that is not always the case. But the idea that we blame our families and our communities for our schools drives me crazy.
And the other thing I just add is that what we said is we made sure that every single parent who registers their child for school has an opportunity to pick it. You don't need to know that about it. You don't need to meet a certain deadline.
Right.
You go there, the application, when you the registration form has it listed. So you have a chance to do it, because we want to make sure that everyone has access to it. And that really should be the focus, is how can we do more of it, not less of it?
Yeah. Do you have to deal with the special needs burden that traditional schools have to deal with?
I'm glad you asked that question, because I think there is a misperception, even among our families, given our outcomes, that we don't serve all children, and we do. We are held to the exact same standard as traditional public schools. Any child that is chosen from our lottery, it is then our responsibility to serve that child and do it well. And we are actually seeing an increase in the number of students with special needs in our school, mostly because of siblings. Mm-hmm. Once families come into our school building, they know we serve all children, and then they without hesitation apply for their other children or cousins or family and friends. But I hosted about 25 potential parents this morning, and three of them had children with special needs with them on the tour, and asked many questions about this, and actually got to observe the reality that we certainly serve all kids, and it's very apparent if you come to our school.
Yeah. What about there's been some noise lately about the number of suspensions. Can you get into that a little bit? Do you suspend more students than other than traditional schools?
Yeah, I appreciate you asking that question as well. Last year, admittedly, we had a more challenging year, particularly in one of our elementary schools. And frankly, we suspended more kids than we should have. And we put a really strong plan in place to reduce those suspension numbers. And I'm happy to report that I think we've suspended less than 1% of our children this year. But
how many did you suspend last year?
So about 13%. Of our students in one of our schools. If you look at it across the district, it was actually closer to 5 or 6%.
Right.
But one of our schools had some struggles and used that tool much more often than it should have been used.
Yeah.
I will say that those students who were suspended are still in our schools. I think sometimes the belief is suspension is used as a tool to get children out of your system. And that is not our purpose. And we do find suspension is sometimes a good tool. Sometimes it creates a really strong partnership with a family. We're able to create really strong plans for kids and move forward in a way that maybe we couldn't have without that sort of extreme option. But we are cognizant of the fact that it's not the best option. And we want kids in school every day, all day. And we are very committed to reducing the suspension rates. And like I said, this year our rate has dropped a lot. And we're employing different strategies to ensure we can keep all kids in school.
Why? What happens to the kids when they're suspended? They go home? What's the process?
So I think there are two. There are in-school suspensions and out-of-school suspensions.
Yeah.
And the way that we report suspension, if a child is out of class for 90 minutes or more, we call it a suspension.
Right.
So there are scenarios where a child may have been needed to leave their classroom because they were struggling.
Right.
And if they're out of the classroom for 90 minutes, we report it to the Department of Ed as a suspension. But they may have been in class that day for 6 hours. So the numbers are a little bit deceiving in terms of how many kids are actually at home, like in their rooms, as opposed to in our school building. More than 50% of those kids are actually in our building, but may not be in their actual classroom community for a period of time. And the way that we report that is that that's a suspension.
So none of the suspended kids have gone to traditional schools after being suspended?
I wouldn't say none. There are probably a couple of students who have left our school system.
Yeah.
Most of our attrition is due to students moving out of one of the districts we serve.
I see. Yeah. Mayor, politicians say mayoral academies drain money from the school system when growing numbers of students attend them. What's your reaction to that?
My reaction to that is that the money belongs really to the kids, not to the school system. That means that, you know, we have a law in Rhode Island, the money follows the child, and I think that's the way it should be. So my reaction is that no one has the right to that, in my view, but for the kids, right? The kids have a right to get the best education possible, and that's the focus. And what the real focus should be on is how do we improve the outcomes in our school districts across the state to make sure that all of our kids are getting a top-flight education. You hear that argument. I've heard that argument. And my attitude is that we have to do everything we can to educate our kids. And if we know something is working, we should continue to do more of it. If we know something isn't working, we should do less of it. And that money is not the school system's money. That money, in my view, is the kids' money. The parents are paying to make sure that their kids get an education. In some cases, people who aren't parents are paying to make sure that kids get a good education. So my view on that is that. And the other thing is this. If we improve outcomes in all the districts, that's great. I think competition is a good thing. I think competition is a very good thing. And so that's great. We improve the outcomes in our all of our school districts. That's great. And that should really be the focus.
What I hear at the State House is we can't afford to run two different public school systems. We just can't afford it. And every time somebody goes to a mayoral academy, it means we have to do everything we have to do with less money.
Yeah. Well, it's not two separate systems. It's really one system. And mayoral academies are public schools. And as I said, in many ways, the governance is a lot more public than in a traditional school. So that's the way that I look at it. And the other aspect of it is focus on the kids, not the adults. If you focus on the kids and the outcomes and not the adults, I think you're going to have better outcomes as well. So I've heard that argument as well. But as you know, it didn't stop me while I was mayor from pushing for Achievement First and knowing that we could really improve education. And I'm proud of the work that they've done. I know that there's a lot more to do, but we've really kind of set an example, I think, of what we can do and that all kids, irrespective of the background, can learn and achieve at high levels. As you know, some of these kids outscored the most affluent districts in our state, which is something that
I'm
very, very proud of.
It's an amazing thing to see. It's just incredible. Those students are doing wonderful work.
Well, it's fantastic to see they're achieving at high levels, especially when folks, a lot of times people will say, well, it's poverty. Well, it's their background. It's different things. Now, I believe even educating the whole child. There's no doubt about that. You have to deal with all these issues.
Yeah.
But we've seen a model that works and can work, and I hope that we can see more of it across the state.
Well, could you refresh my memory on how Achievement First wanted to expand, what its proposal was?
Sure. So our initial plan in Rhode Island was to have two elementary schools feeding two middle schools and growing to one high school. And that is still approved and still in place. So that's happening right now.
Yeah.
A couple of years ago when we were applying for the expansion to make sure that we had a high school for our kids to go to, we added another potential kindergarten through eighth grade school to the footprint. So we have the potential, with the state approval, to have three K-8s feeding one high school. That would get us to about 3,000 students.
Right.
When we were going through that process, our board approved the majority of that expansion. And Mayor Alorza asked that he have the ultimate approval for the third K-8. He's very concerned about the financial impact of that third school.
Yeah. So it's frozen now, right?
It is frozen for now, yes.
Mayor, what do you think of that?
Well, I think that, to be clear, the school will continue to grow as originally planned, which is the proposal we set forth. So we're talking about the second part of that. And I think that we should educate as many kids as we possibly can. If we know it's working, we need to do more of it. So, this is something that's too important for us to stop. I think we need to continue to support it and also take what we've learned from it and expand it across our schools. I'd love to see several of the schools in Providence, the traditional public schools, take on a longer school day and a longer school year and see how they do comparatively to some of the other schools that stayed at the same, with the same length of the school day or the length of the school year. And I would bet you right now that I know one outcome, and that is the students would do better because they're spending more time in school. So what we really should be doing is figuring out a way to take what works at Achievement First and spread it across the district, not just in Providence, but across the state.
But in the meantime, isn't it important to save as many futures of kids as you can and expand Achievement First? We've advocated that on our editorial page. we should be expanding Achievement First to the level they are requesting.
Absolutely. No, I mean, if I didn't make that clear, then absolutely. We should be doing that. And also figuring out, how can we take what we've learned there and put it all across the district? That should be the focus, not saying, well, we're not going to let you grow any further because it's draining money. The truth of the matter is that money belongs to the kids. And if the kids are learning and they're doing well, then good. That's a good thing. And that's a good outcome. And we should have more of that.
Politically, how do we move this ball? How do you get especially the inner cities, urban core, to start doing longer school days?
That's a great question, Ed, and I'm smiling because the politics of it, you know, I was interviewed a while ago with another station, and I said, you know, I'm in the minority of my party, right? I'm a Democrat, and I'm in the minority of my party, and I don't understand for the life of me how charter schools and the mayoral academies are not progressive issues. This is about our children and making sure they have good outcomes. And so one of the things I've talked with Elizabeth about is, honestly, I think we need to get more parents involved. We need to get more of the parents involved because for us as elected officials, or in my case, a former elected official, you know, people will quickly, you know, kind of put you in a box one way or another in terms of your view. But it's harder when it's parents going and fighting for it. During this expansion that she talked about, the second one, the expansion beyond the original one, you know, it was amazing because they had hearings. I know you covered it here at the Journal. But what you had was really the parents, mostly minority parents, fighting and getting up there and saying to the board, we really need this expansion. This is important for our kids. This is important for our future. And a lot of people who've represented the status quo saying, you know, no, this is taking money away from the regular schools. This is not a good thing. And you have other people fighting for their future. And the board, with the support of Governor Raimondo, voted to expand it. We need to get there. But I think that the parental involvement was key in that, in terms of not just having an elected official, even, you know, people who work at the school, but the parents out there fighting for their kids. It's a tough thing because the other thing that's happened is that education reformer has become a bad word in many ways in our political system. And so we have a lot of work to do, but I think if we can get more...
teachers feel like they're being jerked around. You know, they're trying to do the best they can, but the rules keep changing.
Well, look, we have outstanding teachers across our state, no doubt, and I'm a product of the outstanding teachers in our public schools. This is a focus on how can we change the system in a way that is longer. It's not a teacher's fault that it's a shorter school day. It's not a teacher's fault that it's a shorter school year. So that is not a teacher's fault, right? So we need to change fundamentally the system to show what we can do with kids when we expand their learning opportunities. So I'm not putting it on teachers in that sense. Now, I do think you have to have an evaluation system, and just like anything, right, and any profession, an evaluation system, and if folks are not working out, then you need to make decisions to move them along. But most important is really, I think, the changing the system overall.
Yeah. Elizabeth, do you know, is a longer school day part of the reason Massachusetts is more successful than Rhode Island?
That's a good question. I'm not sure. Yeah. I don't want to talk out of turn. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Any idea, Mayor?
I'm not certain, but I can tell you this, that if you have an English language learner, like a lot of the kids that are going to Achievement First, who speaks Spanish, in my case, you know, we spoke Spanish at home.
Yeah.
Having that extra time in school, I don't have the research in front of me, but I bet you I can find you some research to say that's a really positive thing.
Yeah.
And I think it's almost common sense as well. So you have that little bit of extra time with students. And maybe not everyone, you know, maybe some of the more affluent places don't need, you know, that extra time and that extra, the longer school year. But I do believe that kids who are facing challenges, that extra time can be extremely valuable if used correctly.
Yeah.
And I believe that when we extended the school day 15 minutes, I believed it would Achievement First. And I think that if we do more of it, especially in places that are the most challenged, I think we're going to have better outcomes.
Great. Well, I'm afraid we're out of time here. That went very quickly. I appreciate you taking the time to come in here, and I'd like to congratulate you both for the success of Achievement First. It's striking and staggering and wonderful.
Thank you very much, Ed, for having me on.
Thank you, Ed. Thank you.
This podcast is a production of the Providence Journal, online at providencejournal.com.